Allow me to formulate the idea for a moment. It will not be our main text, but allow me to formulate the idea. Would you please turn in your Bibles to 1 Peter chapter 1? We'll look at the introduction of 1 Peter chapter 1. And that will give us the substratum or the basis from which we will launch into the Word of God for today. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse number 1. Peter, an apostle of Jesus Christ, to those who reside, note the terminology, as aliens. They are exiles, scattered throughout Pontus, Galatia, Cappadocia, Asia, Bithynia, who are chosen according to the foreknowledge of God the Father, by the sanctifying work of the Spirit, to obey Jesus Christ and be sprinkled with his blood, may grace and peace be yours in the fullest measure. Please note that he addresses them as individuals of exile or aliens. And this is not simply his introductory language. If you turn over to 1 Peter chapter 2, verse number 11, he says further, "Beloved, I urge you as aliens and strangers to abstain from fleshly lusts which wage war against the soul." In other words, what the Apostle Peter is reminding his listeners of is that they are living in this world, albeit not of this world. They are the ultimate exiles. They are the ultimate strangers. They are the ultimate foreigners. And he is encouraging them to not become so situated and comfortable within the framework of this time and this world that they forget that their true citizenship is beyond this plane. So one might say that Peter addresses them because they are passing through. They are passing through. Now that's a very pointed idea, that the believer is an individual. He or she is a person who is in the world but not of the world, and whilst staying in this world for a while, this world may not and must not be considered his or her permanent home. They are described as individuals who are here in temporality alone. They are passing through. But let's entertain something in greater generality. And now we come to our text. Would you please go with me to Genesis chapter 5? Genesis chapter 5. I'll begin reading at verse number 1. This is the book of the generations of Adam. In the day when God created man, he made him in the likeness of God. He created them male and female. And he blessed them and named them man in the day when they were created. When Adam had lived 130 years, he became the father of a son in his own likeness according to his image and named him Seth. Then the days of Adam, after he became the father of Seth, were 800 years, and he had other sons and daughters. So all the days that Adam lived were 930 years, and he died. Seth lived 105 years and became the father of Enosh. Then Seth lived 807 years after he became the father of Enosh, and he had other sons and daughters. So all the days of Seth were 912 years, and he died. Enosh lived 90 years. And became the father of Chenan. Then Enosh lived 815 years after he became the father of Chenan, and he had other sons and daughters. So all the days of Enosh were 905 years, and he died. Chenan lived 70 years and became the father of Mahalalel. Then Chenan lived 840 years after he became the father of Mahalalel, and he had other sons and daughters. So all the days of Chenan were 910 years, and he died. And if one continues to read through this particular text, you'll notice that this mantra, this phrase, as it were, as he died, and he died in verse 14, by the time we reach there, that is the fourth time that it is mentioned. In verse number 17, that is the fifth time. In verse 20, that is the sixth time. And then there is a spell of relief in verse 22. Look with me at verse 21 to begin with. Enoch lived 65 years and became the father of Methuselah. Then Enoch walked with God 300 years after he became the father of Methuselah, and he had other sons and daughters. So all the days of Enoch were 365 years. Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. This particular text argues for a general passing through that belongs to all humans. As we are entertaining this text, what we see is a dual passing through. There is a general passing through of all human beings, and then there is a specific passing through of those believers who belong to Christ. Note well our context. The first five chapters of Genesis rehearse the creation of the cosmos and the origin of humanity in general. God creates man from the dust on the sixth day, then provides him with a wife, or in its ser, a helper, to suit him. They stay in paradise for a brief time, and they disobey God and are exiled from the garden with a curse and a promise. The curse involves the ground, it involves intense pain in childbearing, and ultimately it involves death. The promise will undo the curse and death itself through the seed of the woman. And of course, as one develops this particular section, the need for the Redeemer's seed becomes clear immediately with Cain's fratricide against Abel, and the increased wickedness of humanity leading up to Noah. So as one is contemplating this particular section, what is the idea of the Mosaic author? Having covered the fall and the promise of death, he now in chapter 4 gives us a demonstration of death in Cain and Abel, and a further demonstration of death with Lamech, and then in Genesis 5 gives us a genealogy of death. And then in Genesis 6 through 9 gives us the death of the entire world save eight people. It leaves one to raise this question. How does an individual escape death? How does an individual have victory over death? That's the question of this segment. And I'd like to give you my very simple answer before we shoot off into exposition. Let me show you what the answer is. In chapter 5, verse 22, then Enoch walked with God. In chapter 5, verse 24, Enoch walked with God. In chapter 6, in the midst of what will be a dying world, chapter 6, verse 9, the latter section, Noah walked with God. In chapter 3, verse number 8, there is an anomaly. God is walking and Adam is not walking with him. And death is introduced. So how does a believer have victory over death? The clear answer is, you walk with God. Allow me to demonstrate what that looks like within the framework of the text over the next few moments. First of all, I think it's important to discuss the reality of death. Charles Haddon Spurgeon said the following. He said, God whispers to us in our moments of delight, but he shouts to us in our moments of pain. We should never miss a moment during grief to share the gospel, because the ears of the hearer are far more tender in that hour than they in all likelihood had ever been before. Can you hear God shouting concerning the temporality of life now? What is death? The word is moeth, from the root word moot. From the book of Genesis all the way through Revelation, the term for death, whether it is moot or moeth, or in the Septuagintal Greek, thanatos, or in the Koine Greek, thanatos, the word always and only means separation. It never means a cessation of existence or an annihilation. It always means separation. When it is spoken of physiologically, the idea is that the material self is separated from the immaterial or invisible self. That the body of corporality is separated from the incorporeal internal soul or spirit, psuche or nephesh in the First Testament. This concept, if you will, is this idea, that the individual walks through a separation of the vital functions of their materiality, but they are still functional, they are still alive, they are still cognizant, they are still aware, but now they are locked into whatever their spiritual eternal state will be until God raises and rejoins this physical material body with the eternal self. And the idea of this particular text suggests to us, after eight times being repeated in chapter 5 and the ninth time being repeated in chapter number 9 concerning Noah, to cap this section, the idea is death is a reality. And why do we die? Chapter 3 answers that question. We all die because sin has been introduced into this world. We all die because Adam, when he was supposed to walk with God, failed to walk with God, and God took a walk in the garden, and Adam was not with him. He was hiding from him. He was separated from him. And as a result of our sinful nature, exhibited in our sinful behavior, we are now sentenced to death. What is the scope? Who dies? According to Scripture, not dying is an anomaly. You can say you don't know when you'll go, where you'll go, how you'll go, but in all likelihood, it is true that you will go by means of the grave. That is a reality. Are you inebriated with the idea that this doesn't happen to you? It happens to the elders. It happens to the young. Sometimes death takes one quickly, and sometimes death comes in and gnaws slowly and digs and scratches at an individual. But ultimately and finally, if God does not rescue us in some unique way by means of rapture here and now, we will all face this truth. In other words, we are all passing through. Doesn't matter what you grip in life and what you love, one day death will relieve your grip in such a way that it will be taken from you and you will be taken from it. And so the question of the text is, how does a believer who is passing through pass through differently than other people? He or she walks with God. Now let's get into it very quickly and let me show you what that looks like. Look with me at chapter 5, verse number 23. So all the days of Enoch were 365 years. Go up to verse number 21. Enoch lived 65 years and became the father of Methuselah. Did you just notice it? In one text, in verse number 21, he is 65. In the next text, he is 365. What is the point from this text? We do not simply walk with God. We walk with him consistently. We walk with him throughout the span of life. We don't begin this road kind of as a kind of advertisement or as kind of a phase or as a fad, as it were. No, this man's life was marked by walking with God in constancy. If you had met him at 65 years, you would say, now there is a man who's walking with God. And if you had met him 300 years later, you would say he is yet continually walking with God. In other words, the means by which a believer has victory over death is not to walk with God as though it were a passing phase or passing fad, but to walk with God throughout the constancy of all of your days. Look at the text further. Did you notice that this concept of walking with God is mentioned twice? And in Hebraism, being mentioned more than once is an emphatic in the text. The idea is he did not just walk with God, he walked with God with tenacity. He walked with God with intensity. He walked with God in intimacy. In other words, this was a man who made his walk with God his life's priority. It wasn't a side note. Wasn't something he visited and then went away from. It was the mark of this man's life to emphatically and clearly and definitively make it clear both to himself, his family, and the world, I am a man walking with God. Look further at the text. If you look at verses 21 and 22, what you'll also notice is he walked with God through the normalcy of life. Where do you see that? Look at verse 21. Enoch lived 65 years and became the father of Methuselah. Then Enoch walked with God 300 years and he became the father of Methuselah. And he had other sons and daughters. What does that mean? It means this, that he walked with God and he was a married man. That marriage did not prohibit his walk with God. He walked with God and he was a parent. He was able to faithfully parent his children while walking with God. He walked with God and he was able to support his family. In other words, there is no excuse for anything in the normalcy of life to get in the way with your walk with God. A believer who is committed to God will walk with God despite the occurrences of life. There is no excuse. You're a businessman. You walk with God. You're a businesswoman. You walk with God. You're a student. You walk with God. You're a husband. You walk with God. You're a father. You walk with God. You're a mother. You walk with God. In other words, your walk with God is that which informs and bleeds into every responsibility that you have, and no responsibility that you have replaces your walk with God. You walk with God. He walked with God consistently. He walked with God emphatically. He walked with God through the normalcy of life. Notice something else with me. Please look at Genesis chapter 3, verse number 6. When the woman saw that the tree was good for food and that it was a delight to the eyes, and that the tree was desirable to make one wise, she took from its fruit and ate, and she gave also to her husband with her, and he ate. Thus is introduced sin. Go with me further, please, to Genesis chapter 4, verse number 8. Genesis chapter 4, verse number 8. Cain told Abel, his brother, and it came about when they were in the field that Cain rose up against Abel, his brother, and killed him. Look at verse number 23. Lamech said to his wives, Adah and Zilhah, listen to my voice, you wives of Lamech. Give heed to my speech, for I have killed a man for wounding me and a boy for striking me. Look at chapter 6, verse number 5, if you will. Then Yahweh saw that the wickedness of man was great on the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continuously. And finally, would you please turn to the back of your book, all the way to Revelation, and then come to the left, to the book of Jude. It's only one chapter. Look with me at the book of Jude, verses 14 and 15. It was about these men Jude 14:15, that Enoch, in the seventh generation from Adam, prophesied, saying, "Behold, the Lord came with many thousands of his holy ones to execute judgment upon all and to convict all the ungodly of all their ungodly deeds, which they have done in an ungodly way, and all the harsh things which ungodly sinners have spoken against him." What's your point? I am attempting to demonstrate to you that we walk with God in the midst of an evil day. If you're looking for a bright, beautiful, glorious day to walk with God, there isn't one. If you're looking for a convenient day to walk with God, there isn't one. Enoch walked with God in a day where sin saturated the community and surrounded him. Ladies and gentlemen, we have individuals who come to church to walk with God for the convenience of their bills being paid, for the convenience of their bodies being healed, for the convenience of their political party having a resurgence and seeing America restored. You are walking with God in no less evil day than Enoch did. Have you come to realize that? That the diabolical debauchery that is around you is not going to give way for a convenient stroll in the park with Christ. But instead, ladies and gentlemen, we must walk with God in the midst of a day where the darkness is encroaching upon us and its violence is seething and breathing harshly, and it longs to get its ugly claws, its gnarled fingers into the chest of every man, woman, boy, and girl. And yet in the midst of this, Enoch did not say the world is going to hell in a handbasket, and so I suppose that I'll simply join it and go along with the status quo. No, Enoch said the world may be going to hell in a handbasket, but here's one man with his wife and his children who will be determined to walk against the stream and walk consistently with God. As the Lord searches through the earth, can he find 2 or 3, 5 or 10 persons in Resurrection Church who are not going with the status quo and who have determined, "I'll walk with God"? Let individuals rage. Let drugs rage. Let the LGBTQIA small x community rage. Let this and that occur. Let wars occur. But if God looks intently within this earth, somewhere in Resurrection Church, he'll find a man or a woman who's committed to walking with him no matter how evil the day becomes. Look with me at the text. We walk with God. We walk with God constantly. We walk with God emphatically. We walk with God through the normalcy of life. We walk with God in the midst of an evil day. But would you look at Jude 14:15 with me once more? Look at what is said. It was also about these men that Enoch, in the seventh generation from Adam, prophesied, saying, "Behold, the Lord came with many thousands of his holy ones," etc. Did you notice something distinct about that? That he didn't simply walk with God in the midst of the evil day. He walked with God as a faithful witness to the people in his day. Now is no time to become ashamed. Now is no time for you to be a silent witness for Christ. Now is no time for you to hold in privacy your commitment and your love for God and your belief in the gospel. Many times Christians will grow silent. They'll have private convictions that no one ever knows that they possess or have, because they'll say, "I don't want to be a troublemaker. I don't want to stir the pot." And yet Enoch says part of walking with God is walking as a faithful witness and telling individuals who are around you, "This is wrong. This is sin. This is dark. This is diabolical. This is devilish. This is not the will of God for your life or anybody's life." Ladies and gentlemen, Resurrection Church is in need of faithful witnesses who will not simply gather here in the convenience of a Sunday morning together with those with whom you agree, but they are individuals who, when they go out within this evil world, will witness to them and take a risk to their friendship and take a risk to their relationship and take a risk to their status quo and a risk to their job and a risk to their social standing. And they will stand against the culture like Enoch and say, this is ungodliness, and at least you, as you are passing through, should have heard one voice of one believer who's walking faithfully with God tell you this is not God's heart for you. I don't know how many people you've told about Christ in 2024. That's not my job. But as you dawn in this new year, some persons ought to hear that you are a faithful witness of Christ, and they should not only see it in your life, they should hear it through your lips. He walked with God as a faithful witness. Did you see what else he said in Jude 14 and 15? Look at it with me. Jude 14, 15. Look at it very closely with me. It was also about these men that Enoch in the seventh generation from Adam prophesied, saying, "Behold, the Lord came with many thousands of his holy ones to execute judgment upon all." Did you just hear what he said? He said, you walk with God. You walk with God constantly. You walk with God emphatically. You walk with God through the normalcy of life. You walk with God in the midst of an evil day. You walk with God as a faithful witness. And you walk with God in the hope of his return. You're not abandoned to this world. This world is not your home. God is not going to leave you here in the midst of this evil world forever. There will be a day when the Lord will rescue his exiles. There will be a day when he will come for those who have lived as foreigners and strangers and aliens in a world where Christ was not accepted and where you're not accepted either if you're in Christ. And you have to, as you are passing through, walk with him with your eyes up. Always looking, should he call you home or should he split the sky? We walk with God in the hope of his return. One final point, if I may. Look at Genesis chapter 5. Verse 21, Enoch lived 65 years and became the father of Methuselah. Then Enoch walked with God 300 years and became the father of Methuselah. And he had other sons and daughters. So all the days of Enoch were 365 years. Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. We walk with God. We walk with him consistently. We walk with him emphatically. We walk with him through the normalcy of life. We walk with him in the midst of an evil day. We walk with him as a faithful witness. We walk with him in the hope of his return, and we walk with him until he takes us home. We walk with him until he says, "Well done, my good and faithful servant. Enter into the joy of the Lord." Let me tie this in. One should never fail to highlight the living and the passing of a faithful believer who has walked with God. You do know that two of your most esteemed members just demonstrated what it was like to walk with God as husband, as wife, as parents, as grandparents, as businessmen and women. Walk with God through an evil day. Walk with God through sickness. Walk with God through hospice. And both of them kept walking until they walked home with God. That's the legacy that they've left this church. Now, which direction are you walking in? Wait a minute. I'm not asking for a silent affirmation. I'm asking for a life affirmation. If you are in this sanctuary today and it's not clear that you have a life that is marked by walking with God, we need to be very clear about that today. There is no better way to start off this new year than to start it off in a manner that is clear to yourself, to God, and to everyone else. I'm a man or I'm a woman whose life is marked by walking with God. There was a bus driver who had a regular route every single day. And there were certain persons without vehicles or, because of the traffic of the city for convenience, who would ride on the bus with this bus driver on his regular route every day. There was an older gentleman that rode the bus quite consistently. And there was a younger man who was on his way in the youth of his life, about 20s to 30s, riding on the bus with him. And he observed this older man every single day as the bus driver went past, of all things, the graveyard. And every single day, the bus driver would actually stop at the graveyard. The older man would get off, and he would walk to the graveyard. One day, the younger man in his 20s or 30s finally couldn't take any more, and he finally asked the bus driver after the man exited, "Why is it that every day that man gets off and goes to the graveyard?" The bus driver looked at him and said, "No, sir. The man that you just saw get off of the bus is a rather wealthy man, and there is a road that actually leads from here to his mansion, but because of a storm, the road was washed out, so you can't see it. That man is not walking to the graveyard, he's walking through the graveyard to his home." All of you are passing through. Which one of you are going to go to the graveyard? And which one of you will go through it on your way home?